Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada adds, Yamaraj is not a fictitious or mythological character. He has his own abode, Pitri Loka, of which he is king. Agnostics may not believe in hell, but Sukadev Goswami affirms the existence of the Naraka planets, which lie between the Garbhodak ocean and Patala Loka. Yamaraj is appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to see that the human beings do not violate his rules and regulations, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4:17. Karmano hyapi bodhavyam cha vikaramana karmanas cha bodhavyam gahana karmano gatihi. The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. One should understand the nature of karma, vikarma, and akarma, and one must act accordingly. This is the law of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conditioned souls who have come to this material world for sense gratification are allowed to enjoy their senses under certain regulative principles. If they violate these regulations, they are judged and punished by Yamaraj, right? Because they're supposed to be serving in the spiritual world, right? But if they're not, they're going to come here, they want to be separate from God, they still have to follow God's laws, right? Because otherwise, then they'll just harass each other and bother each other. So if the idea is to, if they do that, then how will they fit back into the spiritual world, right? There's a concept of relationships and people and individuals and action and all these different things. Then if they can switch that back to serving the Lord, then it will work, right? But if they just only know, you know, there's no organization, nothing at all, then how will it work nicely, right? So that's the thing. So if they really want that, then there's the animal life. So animals, then they follow the dictation of the Lord. But they don't think I'm following the dictation of the Lord. They think I'm just doing what I feel like doing. But their mentality, the situations that they can thrive in, everything, is already dictated in the Lord, and they follow that very exactly. Right? So only human beings can think whether they want to follow or not. Right? That's the point. So then, from there, then they have to know what is, because pious action will elevate them, but not out of the material world. Impious will degrade them and also not get them anywhere. And then not performing material activities, that will get them out. So that's what has to be understood. Right? Because otherwise, karma may be thought, okay, how do you say, what have we got? Karma, vikarma, and akarma. So karma, now if we take the modern kind of thing, karma will mean then, how do you say, what actions the, you know, whatever is the majority or the people in influence decide is correct. Vikarma is what's against that. Right? And for them, there is no such thing as akarma, trying to give up and this and that. Does that make sense? Then you go into the Vedic, then karma means what's according to Shastra, vikarma means against Shastra, and akarma means not performing karma kanda, just interested in liberation. So they don't actually perform any works as such.
Specifically liberation. I mean, the devotional service will...
No. That's we're getting okay. We're getting to that. Like that. Then in the devotional service, karma means what active means. We would look at, of course, as the fruitive, but for us, karma is what's favorable in devotional service activities. Mm-hmm. Vikarma is what's not favorable, and akarma means then applying those to please the Lord. Does that make sense? So therefore, the activities of karma on the Vedic platform and the activities of karma on the devotional platform are technically the same. It just means the range of activities doesn't need to be as wide for the devotees because they're doing things to please Krishna. While the karmis, they'll have the same set, but they'll have extra for beyond that. Right? Because daily activities are the same for everybody. Getting up in the Brahma Muhurt, brushing your teeth, taking bath, you know, putting tea lock, dressing properly, this and that, some kind of puja, some kind of charity, some kind of sadhana, japa. These are standard. Everybody does that. Right? So it's only when it comes to personal desire, that's where then you'll have extra things that you don't have in the devotional. Right? And then what's unfavorable for them, you know, on the daily basis or the regular basis, that will also be the same with devotees. Right?
Yes.
Our karma, it has two understandings. One, our karma means for the impersonalist, it means not performing any fruitive work. But for the devotees, our karma means not engaged in any work according to karma and jnana, or to pure devotional service. So in other words, our karma means naishkarmya. Whether or not you're performing an activity in naishkarmya, or you're not performing an activity, but still that would be called, naishkarmya is akarma. Sakam, but according to regulation, is karma. And sakam, that's against regulation, that's vikarma. Didn't make sense.
It does, karma yoga.
Karma yoga then means that you're performing the activities connecting you to the Lord.
Huh?
That would be what we would call the karma. The you're connecting it. So the akarma will be you're doing that to please the Lord. Because let's say you could be doing karma yoga where it's mixed devotional service, where there is the aspect to please the Lord, but there's also the aspects to please yourself. Right? So fully akarma would mean pure devotional service. But that's the devotee's all goal. So therefore, of this, we would take it karma and vikarma to be activities of the material world, and akarma to be activity of the spiritual world, devotional service. Because we would technically add the yogis and the jnanis into karma, you know, like that. There's that flavor of akarma, but it's not actually very serious. Right. It may from example and what they do, that can be inspiring. But in actuality, their mentality, that's not good. Does that make sense? So the jnanis, the yogis, may be able to do activities that we ourselves would feel inspired by. You know, how austere they are, how simple they live, how strictly they follow their sadhana, how regular they are. That might be good. But then the problem is they have a motive for doing that. So if you have a motive on the material platform, it always makes it easier. Sorry? Yes, but when our motive is to please Krishna, that's when that all that will be the best. Plus, it will soften; it won't have that hardness to it. But we're also used to, we like that hardness. You know, that is attractive. Joy. You know, that hardness is attractive, just like that feeling of sense gratification is attractive. Right? Someone's confident, someone's enjoying, it's attractive. Does that make sense? You know, like that. And for the jnanis, then their detachment, you know, their confidence, the same, it's attractive. But the problem is they're still both material. So when the devotee has those qualities, those activities, then it's the most pleasant and most attractive in a nice way, personal way, not in a, you know, prestigious way. Yamaraj is appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to see that human beings do not violate his rules and regulations. That's the whole point. Here are the rules, you have to follow them. You don't, you'll get punished. It's simple, you know, straightforward. So that's why hellish planets have to be there, because plenty of people don't want to follow. And it's not that they just have one and now and again there's nobody around, so they have to sit around and wait for somebody to show up. There's thousands of them and they're always full. Yeah. You know, plus the advantage in some of them, you know, it's like on, what is it? What was it? What was the one that was the copper plate?
Oh, that was...
Was that Kumbhipaka? No, that was...
Not receiving...
Yeah, I think that's Kumbhipaka. Huh? Whatever. That one, plenty of people can you know, hang out there. Yeah, no problem. No problem at all.
That's killing Brahma.
Perfectly level.
Kala Sutra.
Okay, so plenty of people can be there. And also, basically getting tossed off the mountains onto the sharp rocks below, then basically your only limitation is how many Yamadutas there are to toss people off. Yes. Right? More people, more Yamadutas. Like, you know, that's all. You know, but otherwise it's not a problem. I don't even think it matters if you land on top of each other. It adds to the experience. It is Narayana's ruling that he should look after this job, which does. Oh no, we already did that. Which he does with obedience. Okay, that matches him there. Okay, then we're down here. The conditioned souls have... They violate these regulations. Oh, no. If the conditioned souls who have come to this material world for sense gratification are allowed to enjoy their senses under certain regulated principles. So they won't go to hell if they follow those principles. It doesn't mean they'll get out of here, but they won't go to hell.
Yeah.
Right? In other words, they won't be punished. They'll just be here.
Yeah.
That's all. If they violate these regulations, they are judged and punished by Yamaraj. He brings them to the hellish planets and properly chastises them to bring them back to Krishna consciousness. So that's the whole point. So there'll be some direction, this and that, but the problem is most people down on the hellish planets are not so interested.
No.
Right? But it's not that they couldn't learn. It's just that by volume, generally most don't. Not that somebody doesn't, but most tend to not. Right? Yes?
So to some extent, what the Madhavas profess, it's correct. Because if you're under a certain mode, you can't really get out. You're just going all the time in a circle.
Yes. Yes. But it's not that, so they're influenced, but it's not that the soul is in that mode. Because then where they're wrong is they think eternally they'll be like that. Yeah, so it's just, so maybe that's, if they didn't get it together, next birth they're over there, right? But the point is that they're influenced by the modes, that that's Krishna's arrangement. It's not that the soul can't, by good association, by this and that, then there's some benefit. So if that comes along, as that comes along, that agyata sukriti will build up till it becomes faith. But the idea is that you don't need to preach at all because the septic souls have just come forward, then what's your glories other than your own sadhana?
What's the point?
Yeah, I'm just saying, what's the point of Madhva being a preacher if we don't preach? So then one hasn't understood the Acharya's mood. Right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise the septic individuals would come anyway. So that's why Lord Chaitanya rejected that group. Because as the Tattvavadis, then they don't understand the philosophy actually properly. Not that part. Everything else is good. It's just that part's a weak. So therefore they don't preach like that. So it's generally those, they don't do a whole lot. They kind of just maintain and talk. In other words, those who would be considered the sattvic souls who have come forward, they just cultivate them. And that's all. They don't preach outside. But those who have come in contact with us, they generally go out and preach, and the other Madhvas think they're a bit weird. Like that. Pejwar, his previous junior, like that. Then they preach. Even Pejwar even got a van, like we have vans, and painted the name of the mutt on that on the side, and then went out traveling and preaching.
Wow.
Yeah. So they'll pick that stuff up. They can see the advantage and see that this is really what Madhva wants. But the others, they're not. So that's why Lord Chaitanya didn't deal with them. And that's why generally, at least up to recently, the Madhvas didn't have a good opinion of us.
Of us?
Yes, of the Gaudiyas. Because we're in the Brahma Sampradaya, but they don't really accept it. Now then those, especially those like leading by Petuar, then they accept, and so then we kind of have, then in their scene, okay, we're okay.
They also
we accept that they're bona fide, but they're going to Vaikuntha, they're not going to Braj, but yeah. But we don't accept that they have a dynamic preaching machine, not like what Madhvacharya established. It was established to create preaching. Like that. So in that way it's, because in everything there's always something that's correct and something is not. What's that saying? The a broken clock is correct twice a day. You know, so like that. It's not that there's going to be. But on that this particular point of when it says there's gradation of souls, that means liberated, conditioned, and fortunate. Well, they take it as goodness, passion, and ignorance. So that's wrong. It's those who are liberated, those who are conditioned, and those who have come in contact with the Vaishnavas. You know, who now are fortunate and are moving forward. Like that. So that's yes.
If you said yes, at Yamaraj, you can bring people back to Krishna consciousness.
So that's what it's for. He brings.
Yes,
he chastises them to bring them back. Whether they take it up or not is another thing.
What are the qualifications at that level to go back to Krishna consciousness?
Means that they take it seriously. So when they come back to human life, then they, you know,
because
do something.
It's a heavy situation. The impression must be quite strong in the mind for this suffering.
Yes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we don't forget. Just like when Prabhupada says solving the problems of birth, death, old age, and disease, what do people work on?
Old age.
Disease.
Not birth,
not
death.
Right, yeah. Death, they'd like to get rid of it, but at birth is not a concern. While we went through birth, it's not pleasant, and we've forgotten it. You know, and that's this life. You know, let alone, you know, some lives before all those lives as an animal. So that's the problem. We tend to forget quite quickly. Because the soul is naturally inclined towards happiness, being ananda. So things that are unpleasant, they tend to forget quite quickly. But unless you're trained to remember. Is that...
Yeah.
Sorry?
It is rare that someone can take Krishna consciousness.
Yes. Yes, but it was there. There's a story about, I think it's one of the stories of Glories of Ekadasi, is that I forget who it was, they introduced Ekadasi down in the hellish planets. And so everyone was following and being either liberated or going back to Godhead or something. And so then the Pat Purush, you know, sin personified, you know, he was getting really thin, right? You know, because, you know, Kali Yuga, he was all filling up, he was getting quite, you know, healthy, you know. And then he's getting real thin, so he went to the Lord and says, you know, but if everybody goes like this, what will be my job? So then he made it okay, then he will have a position for anybody who eats grains on a goddess. Right? Otherwise, they get the benefit for following codicil, and if they didn't, there'd just be another day. But then it was made that if they didn't, then he can come and, you know, how you say, take advantage or control that person. He can influence that person who eats grains on the codicil. You know, like that. So then it made it more regulated. By the influence of Maya, however, the conditioned souls remain infatuated with the mode of ignorance. So he brings them to Krishna consciousness, or at least some awareness, but Maya, due to her influence, then they're back in ignorance. Right? Because that's what they want. You know, in other words, they're suffering, so they're naturally willing to listen. But as soon as they're not suffering, then again they just come under Maya's influence. Thus, in spite of repeated punishment by Yamaraj, they do not come to their senses, but continue to live within the material condition, committing sinful activities again and again. So even though naturally in that suffering condition they could become Krishna conscious, they don't. Right? But the opportunity is theirs. Right? Even with that, as devotees, difficult situations, if it's not too difficult, or if it's in a difficulty that's not for us too difficult, then we may become more Krishna conscious. But if it's an area that we don't really like, then we may also forget Krishna. So then, even though the opportunity is there, then it's the same principle. Right? 7 to 40. Okay, so that was, what was that? That was mechanics of guna and karma, because that has to be understood. Why you would someone would go to hell, someone would go to the heavenly planets. Right? And someone else missed the bus. Okay, the 28 main hellish planets. Right? So these are the more outstanding ones that have you know, special features that we could really see as unique.
You know?
Well, it says planets, so it seems to be their own place. You know, you have one place that's just a whole bunch of mountains with, you know, really sharp rocks down on the bottom, and so then, you know, there's plenty of space for tossing everybody off the mountains. Or one planet is just, you know, a copper ball, you know, fire inside, sun outside, you know. I'm not sure how they, I mean, they're able to move from there up to here quite comfortably, so I'm sure they can move around the planets there quite well. So they don't seem to have any problem. I haven't heard of any, you know, traffic or, you know, rush hour or something like that.
Unemployment.
Yeah, unemployment, any of these kinds of things. So they seem to be okay. I'm not sure if that one with the copper ball isn't the one that the, who's it, the little prince is on or something like that. Because it's just a little dinky planet he's standing on. But it wasn't that hot, so maybe it's not. Maybe it's something else. A cooler version. Maybe it was more pious. Okay, and so therefore it's just the little round ball but no fire.
I think he had a flower.
Had a flower? I don't remember. All he knows is there was this guy on this little dinky planet. Wasn't there an elephant? Huh? Huh?
A rose. He had a rose.
A rose. Okay, he had a rose. Okay. So something. So not as bad.
Not so bad.
Not as opulent as Indra's place, but not as bad as these places. Okay. Sorry?
That was his companion.
That was his companion, was the rose. Oh, okay. Okay. So he's the original one that says a rose by any other name, that one. And then what's his name? Shakespeare just plagiarized that. No? Isn't that the English always take stuff from the French? So.
I think Shakespeare was before.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You're thinking it was the other way around? No, I don't think that's going to work. That's not going to work.
That's
not going to work. Yeah. Okay. Srila Sukadev Goswami next describes the 28 main hellish planets in detail, revealing the specific types of torture offered in each one. Offered. And here we offer them.
You can't decline.
You know, and then after they've been introduced and all that, enjoy.
Yes.
That's okay. And the particular behavior that qualifies one to gain entry in such a place, right? It's not just anybody can get in. You have to be qualified, right? Yeah, you have to have Adhikar, and then you have your maitre d', you know, everybody's there, right? The severity of torture dispensed in these hells is proportionate to the severity that one misused their lives to exploit others. In some of these hellish planets, offenders are tortured by ferocious animals and torn apart. Some are boiled in oil. Others are repeatedly dashed upon sharp rocks, while others are severely burned or forced to drink molten iron. As the impious are thusly bound to the hellish planets, the pious are similarly bound to the heavenly planets. One who wishes to escape this temporary realm and return to his natural position in the spiritual world must first control his mind by understanding this Virat Roop, so that he can gradually think of the spiritual form of Sri Krishna. Right? Because this is all going on, it's all part of the universal form. So if you understand how it works, how you move through it, then the real thing is then developing that relationship to Krishna. So then you have to see from the Virat Roop into Krishna, you know, in the transcendental form. Mm-hmm. Right? Going from the mundane forms that we're used to, seeing Krishna, his potency workings in there, then back to Krishna himself. And then how to do these things here for him there, you know, personally. That's actually what the point is. Right? So we can see as here's a further state. We're talking about the hellish regions, but how they're being brought together for this. Sukadeva Goswami said, some authorities say that there are a total of 21 hellish planets. And some say 28. My dear king, I shall outline all of them according to their names, forms, and symptoms. The names of the different hells are as follows. Tamistra, Andatamistra, Raurava, Maha Raurava, Kumbhipaka, Kalasutra, Patravana, Sukaramukha, Andhakupa, Krimi Bojana, Sandamsha, Tapta Surmi, Vrajakanta Salami, Salmali, Vaitarani, Puyoda, Pranarodha, Vishasana, Laba Baksha, Sharameyadana, Avichi, Ahyapana, Kshara, Kardama, Rakshogana, Bojana, Sulaprota, Dandashuka, Avata Nirodhana, Paryavartana, and Suchimukha. All these planets are meant for punishing the living entities. My dear king, a person who appropriates another's legitimate wife, children, or money is arrested at the time of death by the fierce Yamadutas, who bind him with the rope of time and forcibly throw him into the hellish planet known as Tamistra. Right, so then they're bound by time, because time you can't get out of. Right?
It seems that all those hellish planets are for sensual deviations, but there is no hell for a philosophical one. So it's the same.
No, it would be the same, because the difference between the sensual and the philosophical is the reaction is 100 times more in the philosophical. Because where is the philosophical going to end? What's it going to support? My body, sensual, something like that.
Well, my point is that when we usually say that devotees, they punish, like to punish each other for sensual deviations.
Yes.
And they don't punish for philosophical so much.
Yes.
Make it more lenient.
That's simply because of the, yes. That's because philosophy isn't seen as, unless it's a philosophy it supports your controlling and enjoying, it's not. It's just considered theory. You're saying that because here it seems to be all because of the sensual, that's why we tend towards only seeing punishment in the sensual. Yeah, could be. But at the same time, as the reactions will be that of, because the philosophy will end in some kind of activity that's improper. And so where that activity, that's where the reaction will be. Just you'll get 100 times more. But, like you said, it's not direct. It doesn't seem that that's what it's for.
Yeah, because here, at least people might think twice before doing that.
Yeah.
But if there's no punishment for philosophy, wrong philosophy, so it's kind of wide open.
Yes, that's why then the Vaishnava intellectuals are supposed to, close the gate. And then the gate opened by the modern intellectual should be closed by those who follow the Vaishnava Siddhanta. That's the, I say. Then the term is, I think, when you're closing the gate, then were you born in a barn?
Yes.
Right? You have that one? You know, when the kids always leave the door open, they don't close the door, then are you born in a barn? Or, some form of that. Huh?
There is no doses, you don't have to
Yes, that's why in the Gurukul, except for the Pukka buildings, there are no doors. Then they don't have to close them.
They don't slam it.
Yes, they don't slam it either. Yes. What do you call it? The door of no doors. Like that. So, more self-realization. Right? Yes. Okay. On this very, so it mentions, so it doesn't seem that Tamisra would be where appropriate someone else's non-legitimate wife. You know, people are just hanging out and all that, so it doesn't seem that this would be the hell for somebody has a girlfriend and, you know, they're not necessarily so serious, and then you work in such a way that then they become your girlfriend. Doesn't appear that there'll be something else for that, you know, there'll be something connected. You know, some other thing, it won't be as much as, because legitimate means then it's meant for practicing Krishna consciousness. The other is then basically is sense gratification. Right? So then there'll be something less there. On this very dark planet, the sinful man is chastised by the Yamadutas, who beat and rebuke him. He is starved, and he is given no water to drink. Thus, the wrathful assistance of Yamaraj cause him severe suffering, and sometimes he faints from their chastisement. The destination of a person, okay, so his place is dark, they're always beating him, and then they don't give him anything to drink or eat, so then, you know, it's a great suffering. So he'll feel thirst, he'll feel hunger, he'll feel the pain. But because it means the subtle body doesn't die. Right? So they put a covering, but the subtle body doesn't have senses or anything. Right? It needs a gross body. So they cover the subtle body with this other special kind of body that's not a gross body. Right? But it allows you to experience all the things that you would experience if you had a body. Right? So that's why you don't die. Is that body can't die because it's some quite a subtle thing because it's connected with the subtle body. So you're, as long as you're there, you're stuck, right? You may faint, but you won't die. And it appears here that they don't, when you faint, they don't seem to throw a bucket of water to wake you up, because then you might get some water out of it. So, like that. Yes?
I have a question. After that, until the bones are not ashes, then soul doesn't go to
till the soul does, I mean, till the bones don't turn to ashes. But is that connected with this, or that's connected? You're talking about the cremation. No, but there, why you burn the body is, one is just the, I mean, it has a few things. One is that the purity is that you get rid of the body, then there will be no disease, this, that, blah. The other thing is that the attachment to the body is there. So the person who is in the body is attached, so if you burn it really hard to stick around. And those others who are connected as relatives, they'll be attached. So when it's basically, you know, you could say it's the, what do they call that? The ultimate closure. Right? Because its body's gone. So that's the whole point. You know, that was the whole point with Hiranyakashipu and the ladies of the house, you know, is that they're, you know, lamenting, and so they tell the story about the queens. And the king said he wouldn't let them take the body for a cremation because that's what they're actually connected to. But the point is it's the soul that actually makes the body work. So the relationships is being dealt with the body, but it's actually the soul that's the living entity. But they don't do that. It's not soul to soul, it'll be body to body. So when the body goes to burning, then that's it. It's gone. Right? So that's what it's for. I don't think it has something to do with the hellish regions. Because that is, they may stay around in a subtle form because they're attached. But what if the body's gone, then they have to move on. If it's by because of attachment. There's supposed to be a ghost, there'll be a ghost anyway. You know, burn the body or not. But the point is, if you don't burn the body, being a ghost, then they might come and hang out. And then you have, you know, granddad walking, you know, how you say, a zombie walking around the house. So you wouldn't want that. Right? Uncool, right? Yeah. sleepwalking is bad enough.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. The destination of a person who slyly cheats another man and enjoys his wife and children is the hell known as Andhatamisra. There, his condition is exactly like that of a tree being chopped at its roots. Right? Because the point is the man is the root in the family, and then you're cheating him and then enjoying the wife and children somehow or another without him. So then you're chopped at the roots. Like that. Even before reaching Andhatamisra, the sinful living being is subjected to various extreme miseries. These afflictions are so severe that he loses his intelligence and sight. It is for this reason that learned sages call this hell Andhatamisra. Right, it's just darkness or, you know, ignorance. It's just you can't understand what's going on. A person who accepts his body as his self works very hard day and night for money to maintain his own body and the bodies of his wife and children. While working to maintain himself and his family, he may commit violence against other living entities. Such a person is forced to give up his body and his family at the time of death, when he suffers a reaction for his envy of other creatures by being thrown into the hell known as Rau-Rava, 7-10. In his purport to verse 10, Srila Prabhupada comments, in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridha duke swadhi kala tra dishu bhauma ijyadhi yatirta buddhis salile nakarhi chij janeshwa bigeshu saeva gokara. One who accepts his bodily, this bodily bag of three elements, bile, mucus, and air, as his self, who has an affinity for an intimate relationship with his wife and children, who considers his land worshipable, who takes bath in the waters of the holy places of pilgrimage, but never takes advantage of those persons who are in actual knowledge, is no better than a cow or an ass or a cow. Right? Because they also live in the holy place. They also may go down and take bath in the river, but they don't take advantage. They think they're the body. They're attached to the family, the relatives, their situation. They like the place where they are, the particular fields they graze in. They like those. You know. So what's the difference? That's the point we made. So that's the point, is that when they're attached, it's not that they're performing duties to maintain the family. It's that they identify with the body and they're attached on that platform. That's where the problem comes in. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.84.13. There are two classes of men absorbed in material concept of life. Out of ignorance, a man in the first class thinks his body to be the self, and therefore is certainly like an animal, sa'eva gokara. The person in the second class, however, not only thinks his material body to be a self, but also commits all kinds of sinful activities to maintain his body. Right? So the person who just thinks he's, you know, the body and that, then he's like an animal. But he's doing his duties, just like the animals are doing theirs. Right? But this one, then, to maintain his body, then on top of that he's performing sinful activities. Right? So the animals don't do anything out of what they're supposed to do. Right? Right, you don't see is that, you know, in the morning there's the nice open field and, you know, you get the fresh air and the nice breezes and the, you know, flowers in the breeze and, you know, hear the tinkling of the bells of the cows that are just leaving to go to the forest, and then in the distance you hear a lawnmower. And then you think, what's that? Who's doing that? Then you walk closer and you see, you know, one of the cows or a couple of the cows are out there mowing the lawn and packing into bags. And then once they've done that, then they leave the thing and go back to the place, and then they eat all the grass, and there's no grass left for the other cows.
Sounds like a far side.
Yes. Or, yes.
Where they're standing around talking to each other, and one of them says, car, and
then
they go
back
and go
Yes. So they don't do these things, right? We goof on it, but they don't, right? You know, so that's it. It's strange, so it's funny, you know, like that. But when the man does the, then it's strange. You know, it's not proper. He cheats everyone to acquire money for his family. And for his family and his self, and he becomes envious of others without reason. Such a person is thrown into the hell known as Raurava. If one simply considers his body to be his self, as do the animals, he is not very sinful. Right? Because you may end up in some animal bodies, but he doesn't have to go to hell for that, because he hasn't disturbed anyone. However, if one needlessly commits sins to maintain his body, he is put into the hell known as Raurava. This is the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Although animals are certainly in the bodily concept of life, they do not commit any sins to maintain their bodies, mates, or offspring. Therefore, animals do not go to hell. However, when a human being acts enviously and cheats others to maintain his body, he is put into a hellish condition. So that's why then, even as in this, the situations may be hellish. Right, and then actual hell waits them later. Sukadeva Goswami continued, in this life, an envious person commits violent acts against many living entities. Therefore, after his death, when he is taken to hell by Yamaraj, those living entities who are hurt by him appear as animals called Rurus to inflict very severe pain upon him. Right? I mean, sometimes you see in the old pictures, they seem to be kind of like short little animals. They're kind of like, they're kind of like these far out animals with horns and big teeth, but they're short, and they seem to walk around on two legs, you know, like that. But they're pretty wild looking, like that. And so those are the ones that then come and harass you, because they can bite you, they can poke you, they're short enough, they can, you know, take and bite off your kneecaps. You know, they're the whole thing. It's a problem. You know. Little ones bite your ankles, you know, like that. You know, it's Not generally seen in this world, the Ruru is more envious than a snake. Right? So snakes, if you're far enough away, they'll leave you alone. So this is more envious than that. But if you get close, they'll bother you. So here it's just, they're going to bother you. 39. According to Vira Raghavacharya, Ruru is the name of an animal having many horns and which is more cruel than serpents. So many horns, so not even just two horns.
So the Ruru is just fine in that place, or they're also in a hellish condition?
I don't know. It says they're generally, what is it? It says they're generally not
seen in this world.
In this world. So where that means this world, you know, at least we don't see them around here.
No.
But it says generally not seen. It doesn't mean that one won't show up every now and again. But you know, I say, you know, those might be the, what do you call it? What are they called? Chupacabra. Never heard of chupacabra. Chupacabra. It's something that it was supposedly first sighted in Puerto Rico. But it's a creature that is kind of like, it seems to be a combination between, let's say, like a kangaroo and a reptile and maybe a canine, and they got big teeth but small little front legs and big legs, but they don't hop, they walk, and they got spikes down their back, so maybe you throw in a bit of that, what do you call it, the stegosaurus, you know. Yeah, kind of, you know, they kind of put that together. And so there was some movie that came out that had one of those in it, and then after that movie there were so many sightings. Like that, you know. And then, but then they've been sighted other places in the world, so who knows? Yes. No, it means it's that this person bothered you, you want to sort it out, so then you get the opportunity to take birth as a Ruru, so that you can work it out. Yeah, but the Rurus aren't the ones suffering here. You have to remember, you know, they're having a good time. Yes. Yes. That's why one shouldn't be so worried about revenge, because if you are, then hey, you get the opportunity here. you get to be a nice little ruru. I'm sure that, you know, the baby you ruru's to the mommy ruru is quite, you know, cute and cuddly, but to everybody else, then. Yeah, that's the one that goes, oh, you cute little, and then they bite your fingers off. Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Punishment in the hell called Maharaurava. What was this last one? Oh, it was Raurava. Maharaurava, so very big. Yeah. Is compulsory for a person who maintains his own body by hurting others. Right? The other one is Raurava, is where in maintaining, then okay, you'll you know, in getting your work done, you may, but it's not specific. But this is those who maintains his body by hurting others. So in other words, like how you say, you know, repo men, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. Or in other words, the guy's up in the third camp. Third camp. Yeah. It's one of those, you don't know, don't worry about it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes. In this hell, ruru animals known as kravyada torment him and eat his flesh. The other ones, they just come and, you know, bother him, but don't eat him. But these ones, they're kravyada, so there, it seems to be there's something even a little bit more far out, because they got a different name.
Yes.
And so then they torment them. They, you know, they you know, how you say, use their horns and teeth, and then they eat them.
Yes.
Right. In his purport to verse 12, Srila Prabhupada comments, the animalistic person who lives simply in the bodily concept of life is not excused. He is put into the hell known as Maharaurava and attacked by ruru animals known as kravyadas. Sukadev Goswami continued, for the maintenance of their bodies and the satisfaction of their tongues, cruel persons cook poor animals and birds alive. Such persons are condemned even by man-eaters, right? Because they'll kill the man first, then cook him. So then they'll say, it's the ones you cook them alive, says that's not nice. Right? You, even the Rakshasas, they say this is bad. That's them that there, but down here, then, you know, they'll you know, kick, then they'll cook you. Right? Yeah. Vegetarian but don't offer food. Means that they ate the head of lettuce alive, ripping it limb from limb, you know, gnashing it in their teeth and with great satisfaction. You know, while the lettuce is screaming its head off. In other words, you don't have to take things too far. Yes, but they hurt others. But this one here is cook poor animals and birds alive.
They didn't cook it. They ate it alive.
That's another thing. You have that. I remember the what do you call it? I think it was the previous chief minister. Jyoti Basu, yeah. Bengal. He had gone to China for something. And when he came back, he was talking about this amazing preparation. Because Bengalis like fish. Right? And so naturally then they'll, you know, do their Chinese thing, but with fish. But they had one preparation that was so, he was so amazed by, is that they cook the fish, but in such a way, and it's done so quickly, that when they serve the fish is still alive. So he was amazed by that. Yep, there they go. Yep, there they go. You know, so it is there. People do it, so. You know. like that. You know, lobsters, you have to cook them alive. If you kill them, then there's something wrong. I guess there's something weird. I don't know why, but they have to. There's some chemical. So in other words, that's why God tells, you know, Moses or Abraham, don't eat shellfish, right? Because then if you do, then you have to cook them this way, then you go to hell, right? You know, so.
It's not worth it.
No. Okay. In their next lives, they are carried by the Yamadutas to the hell known as Kumbhipaka, where they are cooked in boiling oil. The killer of a Brahmin is put into the hell known as Kalasutra, which has a circumference of 80,000 miles, so it's bigger than here, and which is made entirely of copper. So copper is always considered the best for cooking, like, you know, in a good French kitchen, all the pots are copper, right, you know. Heated from below by fire and from above by the scorching sun, the copper surface of this planet is extremely hot. So we get disturbed at midday when we're out on the asphalt road. Then you can imagine if it was copper. Right?
We didn't put the Brahmins.
Sorry?
We didn't put the Brahmins, so we get our asphalt.
Yes, so we get our asphalt rolling. Yeah, yeah. Plus you get, what do you call it? I figured out a way that you can run water through a pipe with holes in it and things will grow. Well, the ones that did kill the Brahmins, they just get sand. Yeah. Thus, the murder of a Brahmin suffers from being burned both internally and externally. Internally, he's burning with hunger and thirst because, again, they don't bother feeding him. Right? And externally, he is burning from the scorching heat of the sun and the fire beneath the copper surface. So we see that here is that aspect there is then, but I'm not sure if it'll say here, but he mentioned that those who kill Brahmins that are born in deserts. Right? Those who kill Brahmins are born in deserts. Because the sand is hot, the sun is that, you know, that's where you die of thirst and stuff like that. You know, so it's a... I'm not sure. Maybe after hell, when they come back, then that's the birth that they get.
You can relate to it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've been here. Yeah, yeah. Has that, you know, yeah.
All right. So again, he has a body that is designed to have to experience.
No, that's what it means. All of, yeah. When you go to hell, all of them, the subtle body is covered with a special covering that allows you to experience the hellish condition, but at the same time you don't die because it's the mind.
You don't die from starvation, you just feel hungry.
Yeah, it means you could be hungry forever, right? You know, until they drag you out of there and put you somewhere else. You know. Oh, so you're hungry. Okay, you can take you over to Creamy Bojan.
You know? It sounds good, but it's
yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's wild. Yeah. Okay. So externally he's burning from the scorching heat of the sun and the fire beneath the copper surface. Therefore he sometimes lies down, sometimes sits, sometimes stands up, and sometimes runs here and there. He must suffer in this way for as many thousands of years as there are hairs on the body of an animal. Okay, on a Brahmin's head, there'll be around an average of 100,000 hairs. But on an animal, there's way more than that. Point is that it's more than there would be on the head of a Brahmin. Like that, so therefore, better it's an animal. It doesn't say what animal, but generally, you know, it's probably not a hairless chihuahua.
Yeah, oh, they
yeah,
have
yeah, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, there is one kind that's a hairless, but it's I've only seen pictures of them.
I've seen them.
You've seen them? Yeah, scary. Yeah, yeah. A little scary. You know, that all those Siamese, Burmese. Have you ever seen the Bengali cat? It's actually a kind of cat. It's a species. I'm not sure. No, not that. It's another one. Sometimes you saw there have been here and there, but sometimes they're also mixed with these other cats. It would be, they're like the Siamese in that, but they have pointier ears, and their color on their body is more like, what would you say, like pheasant colors? You know, that motley brown, yeah. Black kind of, the whole
yes,
body's like that.
I just thought that they're sick or something.
No. It means it's their coat is like that. They're perfectly fine. It means, but the hair coloring is like that. Well, you see the other ones that are the other kind of cats, they'll be white and this and that. Sometimes you see they're white with patches of that. That means there's mixes between these. But there is a cat that's just like you have the Siamese cat, then you have the Burmese cat, you actually have the Bengali cat.
This is a wild species.
It's a wild species.
Yeah, I've seen
them. But they're small. And so then you can also deal with them like cats. You can call them over and stuff like that. We had one at the other school like that. And then one was half like that. So I haven't seen it for a while. It used to every now and again come by. Every 2 weeks it decides it wants to be petted. So it just comes along and you know, it lets you know it wants to be petted. And you got to pet it for about 15, 20 minutes like that. And then it'll go off. And then you won't see it for weeks or months like that. Then it'll come back.
It's that time.
Yeah, it's that time. But, you know, they're the same size. But then you have the Bonbirals, which are a bigger cat. I don't know what they are. Someone told me once the name. But they're kind of like, you know, that kind of bobcat size. They're a bit bigger. So, but yeah, you do have Bengali cat. But they have very, very big and very pointed ears. Like that. And I think that even Siamese and that, they're not so pointed, the tips. These are really pointed. Okay. So, even you take that, a cat, small dog, anything, it's still a long time. And then the bigger the animal, you know, probably how many Brahmins, it gets more. So, Aurangzeb and his boys, you know, that they probably have to send them, to take them through a few lifetimes of Brahma to get through their
yeah,
their business. Right?
Really thorough.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not sure how it would be. This would be specifically killing. But the point is it's not good. It's definitely not good, but it will be something of less, but it's considered equal to. But the intensity is different. Right? So according to the intensity, then there's something is there. You catch? It means activities that are equal to killing a Brahmin. Like that. Like killing cows is equal to killing a Brahmin. Then blasting, you know, I mean, whatever it is, ruining the reputation of the Brahmin, you know, is equal to killing a Brahmin. So, you know, these will all get bad reactions. So then in that case, then if you're taking that, killing cows also comes in that, so it may mean a cow. And that, you're talking about a long time, right? And that says this, he must suffer as many thousands of years as there are hairs on the body of an animal. So if we got hundreds of thousands, 100,000 on our head, and that's not very big, you stretch that over the body of a cow, there's millions, like tens of millions. So it's a long time. He's there for tens of millions of years.
Times a thousand.
No, as many thousands of years as there are hairs on the body. So however many thousands of hairs, that many.
Anyway, yeah. Anyways,
thousands of years. Yeah, so they're not in a hurry, no. That's why it's 80,000 miles around, so there's plenty of space for everybody. I was just thinking, what if they cheat and they lie on top of each other? But then the point is you still get the sun on top, though you don't get the burning on the bottom. So the guy on top thinks this is good because he doesn't have the burning on the bottom. The guy on the bottom thinks this is good. He's not getting the burning on the top.
But then on the other hand, the guy on the bottom gets the weight of the guy on the top. So it's like being squished down.
Yeah, that's there also. And they're still just as thirsty and hungry. So
yes, also,
that doesn't go away. So. If a person deviates from the path of the Vedas in the absence of an emergency, the servants of Yamaraj put him into a hell known as Asi Patravana, where they beat him with whips. When he runs hither and thither, fleeing from the extreme pain, On all sides, he runs into palm trees with leaves like sharpened swords. Yeah. Thus, injured all over his body and fainting at every step, he cries out, "Oh, what shall I do now? How shall I be saved?" Right? So that's the whole point. You should follow what the Veda says.
Try not to end up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the main point, is one should follow. If it's an emergency, then you have to make adjustments. But if it's not an emergency, then you don't. So that's why Manu gives a whole chapter on how to adjust. But he also makes the point is if the situation goes back to normal, you have to go back to normal. Otherwise, if not, you have to re-identify yourself, reclassify yourself according to that varna by the occupation that you're doing. Right? Then it's not improper.
So Kali Yuga doesn't count as an emergency?
No. You know, it means you can do whatever you're going to do, then you still follow the rules. Yes. You'll have, I'm sure there's going to be various degrees, there's going to be that aspect of it. But there's going to be, as even if you have something, people then have their own, which they in their own social circles say these are the rules. They don't follow those.
Yes.
They'll be punished for that.
Yes.
But I've heard that there's a specific hell for that. It's different. It's for not following the bogus rules that you made up.
It's coming up.
It's coming up. Okay, so then that's also there. So that would be, you'd have to just see. Because there they don't have, but they are not following their own rules. You know. But the point is that people aren't following the Vedas, they're going to be doing something wrong somewhere. Right? Yeah. In his purport to verse 13, Srila Prabhupada comments, "There is actually only one religious principle, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.19. The only religious principle is to follow the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unfortunately, especially in this age of Kali, everyone is an atheist. People do not even believe in God, what to speak of following his words." Right? So there's atheists in that you just don't care. Right, but this atheist, you just don't even think he exists. Because when we say atheistic morality, it means the morality is not based on God. It doesn't mean that you're not necessarily God conscious, just like generally your most world religions, they believe in God. So you could say on one level they are theistic moralists, but the morality that they follow in general is made up by society, so it's actually atheistic. You know what I'm saying? So just in a few points in their life, what they're doing is theistic morality. But for most points in their life, just your common, I guess what they call secular activities that everybody follows in a particular society, those are atheistic.
Quasi-theistic.
Yeah, so that's why he makes his point. Everyone's an atheist. People do not even believe in God. What to speak of following his words? Right. All right. So you just have this. No one follows. The words "Nija Veda Patha" can also mean one's own set of religious principles. Formerly, there was only one Veda Patha or set of religious principles. Now there are many. It doesn't matter which set of religious principles one follows. The only injunction is that he must follow them strictly. An atheist or naistika is one who does not believe in the Vedas. However, even if one takes up a different system of religion, according to this verse, he must follow the religious principles he has accepted. Whether one is a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Christian, he should follow his own religious principles. However, if one concocts his own religious path within his mind, or if one follows no religious principles at all, he is punished in the hell known as Ashi Patravana. In other words, so this is also, you make up your own philosophy, your own religion, so this is... In other words, a human being must follow some religious principles. If he does not follow any religious principles, he is no better than an animal. As Kali Yuga advances, people are becoming godless and taking up so-called secularism. They do not know the punishment awaiting them in Ashi Patravana, as described in this verse. Right, so basically there the answer is that anyone who doesn't follow the Vedic or they make up their own and don't follow it, then they've got a problem. Right? So plenty of you know, Yamadutas with whips, plenty of trees with, you know, leaves like thorns. I mean like swords, so yeah, so Yamadutas are busy at this time of
opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's it. That's it.
So it just, so it means basically for, how do you say, 1/10 of the yuga cycle, then they're basically overworked. And then for 9/10, then they can, you know, it's a little bit more balanced. You know, in Satya Yuga, then they get a good break.
Yeah.
Like that.
But,
yeah.
Like marathon.
Yes, marathon. Marathon. All the new Petris get that don't have anything to do get, you know, they get their jobs at that time, right? Sugadeva Goswami continued, in his next life, a sinful king or governmental representative who punishes an innocent person or who inflicts corporal punishment upon a brahmana is taken by the Yamadutas to the hell named Sukaramukha, where the most powerful assistants of Yamaraj crush him exactly as one crushes sugar cane to squeeze out the juice. So it's the most powerful assistants, so it's not just your regular Yamadutas, the ones that are really big and strong, right? Because they're going to run the guy through a sugar cane juicing machine. And there's a good chance they run him through feet first. Just so that he can enjoy, right?
So he can also get the experience.
Yes, otherwise, then, you know, what's the point? The sinful living entity cries very pitifully and faints, just like an innocent man undergoing punishments. Right? Because the man who's sinful, who has done it, who is getting punished, there's at least an understanding, I've done something wrong. I may not like it. He may prefer it doesn't happen. But there'll be a certain conviction that's there. But then the innocent man, he hasn't done anything. So then what strength can he draw on? You know? So therefore, that's why it's considered so pitiful. This is the result of punishing a faultless person. So faultless means not that he's faultless. It means he doesn't have a fault in the place you're punishing him. Doesn't mean he doesn't have another fault, but where you're punishing him, he has no fault. Right? Because otherwise, he's done this, so now we can punish. But the point is, no, the punishment has to exactly match what has gone wrong. And if it's outside of that, then it's this rule. So the devotees, they're not going to go to hell, but it's not that they won't suffer from, you know, mental anxiety from these things. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
All right, so punishment to a regular person, you have to be really specific.
Yes.
And then to the brahmana, you can't basically punish him.
You don't, because the point is it's brought out what's wrong and this and that. It's not that you don't tell them or stuff like this, but the point is there's no corporal punishment from that. You don't take away his things because they belong to a Brahmin. That's stealing from a Brahmin.
Yeah.
You know, so that no one has rights over those things. You know, we'll do that, but you're not supposed to. But they may banish him.
Yeah.
You know, it means, you know, you're not welcome here anymore. You can, you know, take your things and your family and go. You know, so then, you know, that's
right. Right.
Yes.
But nowadays, all the bars are very mixed.
Yes.
Nobody can really claim, except maybe for smartness or something. We don't deal with that punishment.
Yes. No, but the point is the devotees are in that category of Brahmins. Because otherwise, we say they're we can't identify who is the Brahmin. At the same time, if we can't identify who's a Brahmin, then who's qualified to actually give out punishment? You understand? So, but we don't mind giving out punishment. So that means then it has to go both ways. It means if you can give out punishment, then you have to be qualified to be able to tell what Varnas people are. So technically only someone who's trained in Varnashram and in the law can give punishment. or at least who's trained in Krishna consciousness, and you're judging within Krishna consciousness. But then the punishment will be something that will make you more Krishna conscious. You know, putting you in a situation like, you know, putting you in the 24-hour kirtan or something all day, so you're just chanting all day in front of the deities instead of out, you know, running around being a madman or something. You know, stuff like that. Or
making feast for all devotees.
Yes, making feast for all devotees, you know. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like that. Is that... Makes sense. So therefore, you're dealing within the Brahminical culture, right? But the point is one has to be very, very careful. Yeah.
But Brahmanas, they don't punish, you know, other Brahmanas. It's a duty of Kshatriya. Actually, it's up to the king. He's dealing with that.
He's dealing to the king. Deals to see that everyone's performing their dharma.
Yeah.
So if a Brahmin's not, then he can chastise them for not. But if he takes it back up, then he can't. But if he doesn't take it back up, then the king will reassign him. That now, you know, you're doing, let's say he's doing business or something, and it's not emergency, and he doesn't want to go back to doing other Brahminical activity. So then now he has to identify himself as a Vaishya. Right? So now he would, you know, marry amongst Vaishyas, or amongst Brahmins who also are Vaishyas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that. You know, it's just like, what do they call it? What are they called? I can't remember. There's a Bengali name that is a combination of two. And you get both names in it, but it's called, you know? So it has two proper names, but they're counted as one. Yeah, people, that's their name. I can't remember. Sorry? That, but, you know, so then they'll be, there. Be like, they're from, I think, like Kayasthas are someone from a higher caste who's performing the bureaucratic work. Like that. You know, so that's the thing. So it's not an uncommon thing that dwijas will fall to the platform of Kayasthas. So in other words, they work for others. That's why they do so good. So that would be much of the time, in one sense, not necessarily, but where the position of the middle managers. Because they're technically maybe from higher, so they can function, but they're working as a shudra for higher. You know what I'm saying? So we're not talking about you do this temporarily to learn the business. And either you're part of that, then you move up, and then you're sitting on the top. Or, you know, it's just like, let's say, your father runs it, or uncle, so you start at the bottom and do all the things, but it doesn't make you a shudra. You're just a businessman in training. Right? Or it may be you learn it and then go out and start your own. So that's why it said, in emergency, the Vaishya doesn't have a business. So he may take up a shudra activity in an emergency. So he does that for a year. Learns the business, learns the ropes, then starts his own business. Now he goes back to his normal position. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they shouldn't take up that up. Vaishyas generally wouldn't, but they might. Does that make sense? By the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, low-grade living beings like bugs and mosquitoes suck the blood of human beings and other animals. Such insignificant creatures are unaware that their bites are painful to the human being. However, first-class human beings, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, are developed in consciousness, and therefore they know how painful it is to be killed. A human being endowed with knowledge certainly commits sin if he kills or torments insignificant creatures who have no discrimination. The Supreme Lord punishes such a person by putting him into the hell known as Andakupa, where he is attacked by all the birds and beasts, reptiles, mosquitoes, lice, worms, flies, and any other creatures he tormented during his life. Yes?
Killing
pests. Pests. What do you mean by pests? It means those from across the river from Bud. which side are you from? Huh? You're from Bud or from Pest? It's another city altogether. Okay, so she's safe. She's not a pest. Generally, you catch them and toss them outside. But the main thing is, why is a cockroach in the kitchen? Yeah, because it's not clean. Clean the kitchen. Huh? That's another thing. It flows in the window, then there's one, you pick them up, throw them out, there's no more cockroaches. But if you find there's a whole bunch of them, that means it's not clean. So the main thing is, you clean it, they'll go away. They don't like non-clean clean places.
Maybe it's a self-realized cockroach.
Maybe. It's like, you know, the veranda in Calcutta Temple?
Yeah.
Okay, down at the end of the veranda, there's a little room. I think maybe they may still call it Prabha's room. Okay, now in the back in the corner, there's this little half quarter round closet.
Bathroom.
No, there's the bathroom, and then next to it, there's this quarter round closet, unless they removed it.
Changed.
Oh, it's changed. Okay, good. Because that closet, that was like the place for cockroaches. it was like perfect. Okay, so they changed it. They took it out. Okay, that's good. No, rats, that's just part of Calcutta. When he says big rats, he means that they're, you're talking about with or without the tail. With tail that big. So that means like that big of a rat. I mean, we used to get ones that were that big without the tail. Huh? With tail that big. Like they have a tail, but they're that big. Sometimes when you talk about rats, you talk about with tail or without tail. Because when you say they're that big, you mean without the tail. The tail is extra. That's. Yeah. Is that remember? I'm not sure. I think it was Shatadun. We used to sleep on the veranda, and one night he woke up, and there's this big rat sitting on his chest.
Yeah.
No, they like the toes somehow or another. They really like toes.
Yeah, it's like a
nice. Yeah. Like that. You used to have a theory, they blow on your toe, then you can't feel it, then they bite you. I don't know if it's true, but they used to bother him a lot. They never bothered me, but somehow or another they liked him. No, maybe because he slept under the fan, so it was nicer there or something. Okay. They attack him from all sides, robbing him of the pleasure of sleep. Unable to rest, he constantly wanders about in the darkness. So under Kupa. So it's dark, like the under Tamistra. Dark well, yes. Yes, because one's always attacked from all sides by all the miseries of the material world. Right. Thus, in Andakupa, his suffering is just like that of a creature in the lower species. Because right? They're always walking, you know, they don't have any, you know, there's no particular shelter in this, any time someone can eat you. So this is the thing, is any time someone can, they can come and attack you. Because if he lies down to sleep, they attack him. So, in his commentary to verse 17, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the lower animals live off the blood of humans by the arrangement of the Lord. They are not aware of the pain they cause others. The Lord arranges for sustenance of the human with rules and forbiddance. Because he is human, he can understand the pain of other beings. Srila Prabhupada adds, from this very instructive verse, we learn that lower animals, created by the laws of nature to disturb the human being, are not subjected to punishment. Because the human being has developed consciousness, however, he cannot do anything against the principles of Varnashram Dharma without being condemned.
That's just a pretty straightforward statement.
Yeah, no, Prabhupada, now and again, you'll see Prabhupada will make very straightforward, and generally he'll talk other aspects. Yeah. Because if you always make that, the devotees will mistake that, and then they'll take it wrong. But and also at the same time as them, you know. So, but the point is they have developed consciousness, means they can. So if they follow Varnashram, then that's good. If they don't follow, there will be punishment for that. Right? Because that is the dharma you're supposed to follow. Then if they claim another dharma, then they have to follow that. You know, that's the point. So then... Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chaturvanyam maya shrishtam gunakarma vibhagashaha. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me. Right? So, the according to the modes, there's work. So those who are connected with those modes and that work, then they are given their position. Thus, all men should be divided into four classes, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, and they should act according to ordained regulations. They cannot say, that's the thing, is they have to be a priest in these other religions to be ordained. Right? In the Vedic, everybody's ordained.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They cannot deviate from their prescribed rules and regulations. One of these states that they should never trouble any animal, even those that disturb human beings. Although a tiger is not sinful, if he attacks another animal and eats its flesh, if a man with developed consciousness does so, he must be punished. In other words, a human being who does not use his developed consciousness, but instead acts like an animal, surely undergoes punishment in many different hells. Sukadeva Goswami continued. A person is considered no better than a crow if after receiving some food, he does not divide it among guests, old men, and children, but simply eats it himself, or if he eats it without performing the five kinds of sacrifice. Right? So in other words, you have to perform the five sacrifices, you have to then share with those who are, you know, it doesn't mean you walk out or on the street, it means those within your sphere. Then there, if there's guests at your house, if there's old men at the house, there's children, then it all has to be shared like that. So that means for us, then we means we offer everything to Krishna, right? Perform our devotional activities. That then takes care of these five, right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
What are the five kinds of sacrifices?
That means the sacrifice to the forefathers. Sacrifice to the demigods, sacrifice to the sages, sacrifice to the Brahmins, and the sacrifice to the general living entities. I think that's like that. So those all have the things. The forefathers is by the pinda, by the demigods is by sacrifice, yajna. So the sages by studying the scriptures. The Brahmanas. Is by taking care of the guests, Atiti, Seva, and the general living entities. I think that's done by, you know, when they put out the rice and things like that in the places, because that the charity and all those kind of things. Anything that's nice for people, like that. Those.
And the forefathers was.
Forefathers pinda, the shredder rice.
Yeah.
So they it means, in other words, if you're a human being. And you're of age, you have to do these. It's not a question, I don't believe in them, so I don't have to. It doesn't work like that. Like that. So that's the whole problem. People who don't follow Varnashram, what is their system? So therefore, they have to do things. They have to, you know, serve God, serve Jesus, serve Muhammad, serve Buddha. They have to serve somebody. They have to be following their orders. Otherwise, then, there's a problem. So human life, they're able to follow regulations. So if you don't follow it, then there's problems. Okay. After death, he is put into the most abominable hell, known as Creamy Bhojan. In that hell is a lake 100,000 yojanas, 800,000 miles wide. That's bigger than what we've got here. That's big. Yeah. But also, what is it? Jambudweep is 100,000, isn't it? So it's as big as Jambudweep.
How can it be?
jump and look at the picture. Yeah, so it's like you can't even see Jambudvipa hardly in the picture. So all it is there's that thing. It's just not that middle core section because that's how big the other things are. And so then it's anywhere under there. So it fits quite nicely.
Because those
petals
are smaller.
They're smaller, yeah. They're smaller.
And that was 250. So
Rahu's 300.
Is that himself or that's his path? Because it mentions that. So one of them, I think the sun is 10,000, the moon is 20, and Rahu's 30. That's why you see sometimes the moon comes up here, sometimes it's over there. You know, it goes down next to the samadhi sometimes, and other times it's all the way over here. Because his path is bigger, like that. So Rahu's is even bigger than that. So I guess, you know. Yeah. But they themselves aren't small. They're quite big also. Okay, it's 100,000 yojana is wide and filled with worms. He becomes a worm in that lake and feeds on the other worms there, who also feed on him. Unless he atones for his actions before his death, such a sinful man remains in the hellish lake of Creamy Bojan for as many years as there are yojanas in the width of the lake. So it means he's there for 100,000 years, right? And we thought, you know, waiting for the train was was a trouble, right?
Yeah, this is way worse.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, he who eats what he attains, upanatam, without sharing it, is described to be like a crow, or is praised by those equal to crows. He eats worms and is eaten by them. As long as the sin remains, the person who eats what is not shared, aprata, and which is unoffered, aprahuta, suffers not having undergone atonement, anirvesham. So in other words, it has to be, one has to understand and then correct it. In other words, if someone's doing something, correct it. So if he doesn't atone for it. So as devotees, we just see why it's not favorable in Krishna consciousness and now practice what's favorable in Krishna consciousness. Then it's done. But for the materialists, they have a specific atonement just so that they know. One is that they know that something shouldn't be done, something should be done, and that way then they can be confident that I have atoned. Mm-hmm. Right? So then they can, you know, but then they have to carry on performing the proper activity. Yes.
Look like always necessary is such a long, prolonged punishment. It's like not enough
for
10 years.
Well, but the point is someone who eats it without sharing it with the children or the old men or guests. How deep is that mentality? Yeah. You understand? So, therefore, you need 100,000 years of cream.
Maybe he did it only once because he was hungry.
So you're saying then he should be more towards the outer edge of Creamy Bojan than right in the exact center?
He shouldn't get there. Because they said in the beginning, Shukadeva Goswami said it's very specific for the crime that the person committed.
Yes, but it's not that he doesn't feel bad that he did it that one time.
And repentance.
So. But has all that happened? That's the consideration. If that's all happened, then well and good. But we can't make an excuse that nothing should go wrong, but I'm not also, you understand? So that's why for the materialist, then, they have to have these regulations, because otherwise they don't know anything else. Right? But for the devotees, then it's just understanding the mentality, and so therefore we adjust it and all that. And as we adjust things, then things get easier for us, better for us. No?
Should be.
Should be, yes. Yes.
Who tells the kids and old people?
Yeah.
When we come across all these things in devotees circle, we meet like this and we say, we are devotees, for us nothing. All these things, it doesn't work.
It all doesn't work. What does that mean, doesn't work? What does that mean?
Well, we have Krishna, so
yeah, but so that means then it's all right for devotees to get food and not share it with the others? Right? Kalkata Temple. The temple president come walking out of the, you know, that back room there, you know, and then he's got some Mahaprasad and he just walks past everybody, eats it, doesn't say anything like that, doesn't share it, nothing, and that's okay, right? Because we're devotees. We don't care for the rules, right? So then, what does that mean? It doesn't work. Is there anything that people do here that devotees can do and it's fine? Steal someone else's wife. Make tricks and steal their wife.
If you explain it nicely, then
that's called tricking. It's doing it, yeah. And I mean, what is it, you know? A devotee can go out into the park across the road, kill the animals there. So which of these things the devotee can do because it's perfectly fine because you're a devotee and it doesn't matter and it doesn't work and it doesn't...
We have some good principles, following four regulated principles.
Yes, four regulated principles. And so, but do we follow these things or not? Okay, so we only follow the four regulated principles. Who made the rule how much service you do in the temple there? That's not part of the four regulated principles. I didn't hear... Here. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Is so then, if that's all there is, four regs, and there's nothing else. We just sit in the temple, we just chant like that. But who's going to take care of the deities? Who's going to cook for the deities? Who's going to distribute prasad? Who's going to clean up afterwards? Right? We're devotees. All these things don't work, so that means we don't need bathrooms either. Karmis use toilets, so we don't need to use toilets. Right? You know, we don't need to sleep either, right? You know, so like that, you know, so much space is saved in the temple. We could make them into offices, right? You understand? You have to use your brains. Yes, the devotee may have done these things before, but now that they've taken up devotional service, they don't have this reaction. But it doesn't mean that they're not going to have polluted consciousness from these things. And so by chanting, that'll go away, but the devotee still has to make sure he's not still doing that. Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.